This podcast contains explicit language.
Welcome back to Candidate Confessional, the only podcast that actually celebrates people who have tried to achieve power and failed. I'm Sam Stein.
And I'm Jason Cherkis. And Sam, in this episode, we actually interview somebody that's not a lot of people have heard about.
And that's because he didn't run for president, he didn't run for senator, didn't run for the House either.
You got to start somewhere. And in this case, he ran for mayor of Toledo, Ohio.
The City of Lights, right?
No, actually, Sam, the slogan is, you will do better in Toledo, which is actually true.
It is true. I've been to Toledo. I did better.
Great place.
Along the way, Ben Knope, however you want to pronounce it, he became a cult figure in politics.
And it's all owed to one moment on the trail.
Now, let me set up the scene for you, Jason. A seemingly innocent campaign stop on the street where his mother grew up.
I'm liking it.
Can't be more quintessential than that.
Not at all.
So, Knope enters and encounters this nasty, unruly heckler who just will not shut the hell up.
We're here today in Parkwood Avenue for the street that my mother actually grew up on, down the street. We have a situation in Toledo where there's faulty fire lines and... Run for mayor somewhere else.
So that moment is caught on tape, and it's posted onto YouTube, and it's played over and over and over again for people's sick viewing pleasure.
Nearly a million people have watched it.
Yeah, it remains cringeworthy to watch. I've probably seen it 30 times, but I can't help but look at it.
So we wanted to know what it was like in that very panicky moment.
Yeah, I mean, how do you recover when your biggest professional misstep is broadcast for everyone to see?
And whether it's actually possible to survive the internet.
Beyond the bluster.
Behind the bunting.
Past the posters.
After the ads.
The campaign picks up.
And the motorcade moves on.
What happens when the votes are counted?
And democracy doesn't go your way.
This is Candidate Confessional, a HuffPost podcast.
I'm Sam Stein. Okay. I'm sorry.
Actually, I'm Sam Stein.
And I'm Jason Cherkis.
And we approve this podcast. Why don't we start at the beginning?
Yeah.
Why did you get into politics at, like, what, 24 years old you decided to run?
I ran it at 27.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who runs for Congress at 27 years old?
A very confused lad. no, actually, that was a good experience. I initially got interested in politics. I was a page in the House of Representatives, which they have now disbanded, I believe. That kind of, you know, at like 17 or something, kind of got the bug that way. And so I came to D.C. I was, after law school, doing the, you know, big firm bit. Not very happy, like most people, a big firm. And was trying to actually just get a job on the Hill. And I had an interview for John to be a John Dingell's press secretary, I think, was the job. So I called I had interned and Marcy Kaptur, who's a Democrat from my district in Ohio. She knows, you know, she knew John Dingell very well. And I called their office to see if they could help me out at all. And basically the reply I got back was, well, we got a better idea for you. Why don't you go and run against Mike Oxley in the, you know, extremely conservative 4th District of Ohio. So, and that was actually, that was transmitted to me at a White House Christmas party that Ms. Kaptur invited me to.
Wait, let's stop right there. You're at a White House Christmas party.
That's right.
This is the Bush White House.
Mm-hmm.
And a member of Congress who you've been a page for.
That's right.
Comes up to you. So someone...
Well, she actually invited me to...
Okay.
That was, yeah.
And she says, I got this crazy idea. I know you want to be a press secretary.
Right, right.
Why not just be a member of Congress?
That basically...
Is that really how it went? No.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, pretty much, as far as I can recall.
What did you think?
Well, you know, I was not especially excited about my law firm job at the time, so anything kind of sounded interesting. And I did sort of have in this vague notion of going into politics, you know, very vague. But, you know, I thought there was nothing to lose, you know, really by running against a guy like Mike Oxley. I thought it'd be good experience. You're doing the right thing, basically, because he was, you know, from my vantage point, a pretty poor member of Congress. And, you know, I thought it would be just interesting.
So you went from, like, door knocking to running.
Basically.
Well, 0 to 60.
Yeah, basically. I mean, I hadn't run for student council. You know, I'd never run for anything. Out of principle, kind of, actually. So, anyway.
So how badly did this go?
That actually went really well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It believe it or not, Oxley had not actually run a competitive campaign in 22 years. Huh. And so he did, for the first 6 months, basically, it was like there was no opponent, and you could just take, you know, any shot you wanted. And eventually he kind of awoke from his slumber after our first debate where he did not do well. And, you know, ended up putting in several million dollars. And but we ended up with, I think, around 42% in a very conservative district. And that actually outperformed Kerry.
Well, what did you learn about your own skills?
Oh, my own skills?
Like, because you had never done it before.
Never. You know, at the beginning, I was awful. I think I was like, you know, I didn't really know how to give like a concise, you know, campaign statement or like shake hands with people at like a county fair. You know, it's kind
of
an art.
How would you screw up the
shaking hands? I don't know. My mother would say, you're not looking him in the eye. You know, you're not telling him to vote for you. You're not giving him, materials, right, or anything. You know, we didn't, you know, wear our stickers on the right place and, you know, all the little sort of intricacies. You know, eventually you get sort of in a routine and it's almost like on autopilot, basically. So, you know, by the end, I think I was actually fairly skilled.
So what happens next?
I don't know if you remember, in 2006, there was a relatively big scandal in Ohio politics that was triggered by coins. CoinGate, it was called.
The long-awaited report on the CoinGate scandal is finally released.
It took down the entire Republican
Party. Give us the Wikipedia summary.
The CoinGate. So there was a guy who was very politically connected in Ohio and had basically been got a sort of sweetheart deal with the state to administer funds from the Workers' Compensation Fund to try to invest it and grow it. And he was investing in things like rare coins and Beanie Babies and ended up pilfering.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and ended up pilfering a good portion of the money. You know, just
I remember
the
Beanie Babies.
Yeah. So
they were a thing back
then. They were big.
Jason?
Well, yeah, but I mean,
a smart investment strategy.
Public money.
I don't think he actually technically ever lost money on the investments. I think he got in trouble when he just started pocketing stuff. But the investments actually were not terrible, as it turned out. But anyway, took down the entire Republican Party in Ohio. That's how Ted Strickland won. And Richard Cordray actually won.
So quick note, Ted Strickland is the former governor of Ohio. He now is running for the United States Senate. And Richard Cordray is the current head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, where Ben actually now works.
But in any event, on the local level, it all centered in Toledo, Ohio. And I was teaching there at the time. And the county commissioner had been tangentially involved in, like, passing a check from Noe to the guy who was running the scheme to someone else. And basically, I think as part of her plea deal, she was investigated and given a slap on the wrist. But as part of the deal, she was said she wasn't going to run for re-election. So it opened a seat, in essence, out of the blue. And I just sort of went into like a three-way primary in a very Democratic area, so where the primary is
basically. This is the Lucas County.
Lucas County, yep. Okay. Lucas County. It's a Toledo, Ohio. It's the county seat.
Yeah. One other thing you did, which would ultimately become the first domino in all of this, is you pledged to serve out your term.
I did. I took like a 15-point pledge or whatnot. When I was running in the primary, I think. One of them was to serve the full four-year term.
And you broke that pledge?
Well, I actually ended up not breaking it.
Okay, yeah. You tried to break the pledge.
I was dying to break the pledge, but I just couldn't pull it off. So, I mean, part of, I think, my problem in local politics also was I kind of got, like, shot out of a cannon, and that, you know, basically pissed a lot of people off who had been sort of slogging through, like, running for, like, school board and running for city council and then running for, you know, recorder and then commissioner. And I just go straight to commissioner, like, 30 or whatever. And
you didn't have the relationships that they all
had. No relationships with anybody. I mean, I'd gone to school out of the, you know, area. I'd worked out of the area. So, you know, I mean, yeah, my family's from there. I grew up there and everything. But, you know, in essence, parachuted back in. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm on the front page of the paper every day. You know, news and TV news and things like that. So
this snot-nosed little kid.
That's basically
young
right.
Punk age.
I think that's right. And so no matter what, I mean, it was almost like I could come up with the most amazing, you know, idea that had no downside, and I felt like at least I couldn't get any sort of traction on it.
But instead of this, like, humbling you, it just made you convinced that you needed to move to a higher level.
Well, so arguably, I mean, the budget for Toledo is a lot smaller than the county. In some ways, I mean, it's a higher level because you're one instead of three. But in terms of, I think, your overall workforce and budget thing, it's actually less than what the county would have. But, yeah, I mean, mainly what I wanted to
mayor.
Do. You're a mayor, exactly. Yeah. You are, like, you're Mayor McCheese or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's important. But, no, I mean, in essence, my calculation at the time was I cannot actually get anything done. And personally, and also really just to, you know, be frank, I mean, I was miserable. Like, it's a miserable job when you come to work every day. Still somewhat of an idealist. Wanting to do things, and it's just like you're running into a brick wall. I didn't like my colleagues. I mean, I thought they were, if not actually committing illegal acts, like on the edge of violating like various, you know, public records laws and open meetings laws and things like that. So, yeah, I was just I was personally just kind of sick of it.
So you put your hat in the ring for mayor.
Hmm.
What's the first conversation like? What's the first strategy session like?
The mayor's race actually, before I did it, I went out to, somehow I got hooked up with some relatively large political consulting company in New York City. Went out to New York, met with some guy, paid them a bunch of money to do some polling to see if I had any chance. And the polling came back pretty good. In essence, I was statistically tied with the eventual winner. That was pretty much all I needed at that point to do it.
And when is the first point where you realize you got to come up with an explanation for this pledge you made to fulfill your term? And what was the explanation you were going to give?
This right-wing radio station, I think, picked up on it right away. And they sort of almost staged a protest at my campaign announcement with like four people. I mean,
what happened?
I think they got some University of Toledo students, if I recall correctly, to sort of have like a immediately like off the bat, like let's attack, you know, attack me. And I think one of the issues they raised was that I'd pledged to serve a full term. And, if I won, I wasn't going to.
Yeah, you were heckled from the very beginning.
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. It was a.
That didn't end up on YouTube.
It was, yeah, right. It was an ill-fated attempt, I would say, from the very beginning.
Let's get to the day, then.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why beat around the bush anymore?
Yeah.
Walk us through the day.
The day that I got heckled.
Yes.
That was actually at that point the campaign I think was going okay. The thing I always had a problem. I could never really raise money in any campaign I ran.
Why not?
Well, I'm not good at asking for money. I mean, that's a big part. Secondly, I mean, I sort of have moral reservations about. I mean, you're realistically, they're just getting bought off by the highest bidder, no matter what, and no matter who you're getting money from. Besides that, I thought at that point it was going fairly well. The guy who I had polled and I was initially tied with was the former fire chief, and he was running, and he had an issue where he had basically messed up in how he was labeling or painting fire hydrants. And so firefighters thought, like, this hydrant was working or had some sort of water pressure, but it was painted incorrectly, so it didn't have that water pressure that they would need. And there was, like, a code system, and it was all messed up. And anyway, a woman's house burned down because they had messed up the coating of the fire hydrants. So this is, like, your local politics issue, right? You've got, like, this fire chief who's running on, like, I am a good fire chief. I fight fires, and I rescue people and things. You know, that was his platform. And he ends up, you know, administering basically a total bungling of the system. And a very sympathetic woman's whole house burns down. All her memories are lost. She's, like, on the street. Okay. So that was the issue. And we had a press conference outside of a house with a fire hydrant, like, in the background. I mean, I literally think that was the the decision as to like where to have it.
I thought it was because it was the corner where your
but
mom
it also was the corner where my mom grew up. And okay. I don't know how that played into it.
Okay.
Actually, but I know there was like a fire hydrant there. Okay. I'm pretty sure, and I think that was the issue. I mean, I
so the whole reason for the press conference was to capitalize or to
capitalize. I think is an accurate way to say it. There's no doubt about that.
Go after this guy.
Yeah, exactly. It was to show that you know he was running the show, and there was this big problem, could lead to greater you know. No one really knew how many fire hydrants were messed up, and. To say that I had some sort of plan to fix it, you know, typical sort of local politics.
So you actually were going to be there to be on offense. This wasn't to
of course
you were going to
I in hindsight, I mean, I think I would describe myself as probably a hyper aggressive candidate of some sort. well, because the thing is, I mean, realistically, I had no money, so I had to rely on press and
pre-staged events.
Yeah, exactly, stuff like that, stuff.
It's interesting because. Yeah.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I mean, when we watched the incident, mm-hmm. the heckling, mm-hmm. you didn't come across as aggressive at all. In fact, the opposite of aggressive.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a little different type of aggression, you know.
well, let's build up to like, this. I don't want to jump to the end.
All right,
you show up at the scene.
Yeah.
It looked like a really nice day.
Yeah, I think it was.
It was a nice day. Mm-hmm. And you have what I assume is a crowd of supporters mm-hmm. around you and a few members of the media.
That's right.
Okay. And you start talking.
Yep.
Now, what happens?
I'm pretty sure beforehand someone had told me that there's this guy sitting on the porch who's like, you know, thinks some of our supporters stepped on his flower bed and is like upset or something. Did someone apologize? Yes. You know, should we go ahead with it? Yes. Okay, fine. So, you know, I mean, we did one of these every 2 to 3 days probably at this point. So it's not like, you know, some crazy, you know, one-of-a-kind sort of event. So I guess we just got our supporters, you know, lined up for the camera shots and the media's there and everything. And I start giving my spiel about fire hydrants, I assume. And, this guy is, like, on the porch, starts yelling, I guess, you know, my name.
The street that my mother actually grew up on, down the street.
You know, I didn't really think much of it, except, like, this, you know, is going to be kind of just screw up our little, like, press clip, basically.
We have a situation in Toledo where there's faulty fire lines and...
Run for mayor somewhere else.
But then he keeps yelling.
Yeah, he was very persistent. Yeah, I think so.
And were you sort of contemplating in your head, like, how do I deal with this in a way that doesn't expose me?
I mean, I would say expose me. I mean, I would say, you know, I mean, honestly, like, I didn't think it was that big of a deal. I thought, like, I just needed him to be quiet for like 5 minutes so I could just give my thing and then I'll go talk to him and whatever, you know.
Sure.
We'll talk at whatever he wants to talk about. This is an odd thing because it's just one dude. You know what I mean? And you're sort of just like in his yard in essence. So it's a bizarre sort of confluence of events. And honestly, you know, I think part of it at that time was I wouldn't say completely burned out from politics, but I was getting pretty close to just sort of being sick of this whole thing. So I bet like 2 or 3 years before that, you know, I might have handled it differently, frankly. But
so.
I don't know. I probably, you know, maybe been more aggressive. You know, at this point I don't want to say I was like running out the clock on my political career in Toledo. But, you know, I had sense of that. It was part of my sort of calculus. Like, I just want to get through this campaign. If I win, I win. If not, I'm done. I'm out of here. I tried my best. You know, I think I did some good things, but I just couldn't get it done.
Is there a calculus that goes on knowing that you're being filmed or being watched?
Yeah.
They're like, how do I come across with this guy and look okay for the cameras and not look like a jerk? There's sort of a balancing act that you probably have to
imagine.
I think subconsciously there's no doubt about it. You're trying. I mean, because obviously if you're just walking on the street and some guy started yelling at me, I would have handled it differently, obviously.
Yeah.
There's cameras on you. And, I mean, also, there was a bunch of little kids there for some reason, and I don't know how that ended up happening, but there was a group of small, like 10-year-old or 8-year-old kids.
They weren't part of the campaign event?
They were part of the campaign event, but they weren't campaign workers. No, that would have violated, child labor laws. So I don't know how. I mean, they might have been like family of a supporter or something. They were wearing our shirts. So, you know, it was kind of like.
And they were screaming them.
Safety of many.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they were sort of.
And then he was so consistent over and over again in a sort of monotone.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's interesting, too, is that he is just one guy, as you had pointed out, that he wasn't part of a. This wasn't a protest that was planned because it was sort of, you didn't know he was unpredictable in that way.
Yeah, we just showed up in his yard. So, I mean, I think, frankly, he was within his rights to if he didn't like me and to make that apparent, which he did.
So, but 2 days go by and no one gives a shit. Like, no one actually...
No one. I think there was a brief mention of it in the story in the Toledo newspaper.
Did you think anything about it?
No.
Did your campaign think anything?
I don't think so. I mean,
that was weird?
Yeah. Basically, like, another... I mean, local political campaigning is, you know... It gets weirder and weirder, and then it gets surreal. You know, I mean, you're in, like, it's a very strange bubble or situation for anyone. I mean, there were weird things, all sorts of weird things going on.
Did you go up to him afterwards?
I think I did, yeah. I think I did.
Okay, so a couple days go by, and nothing happens, and then what? I mean, like, it became a sensation.
Yeah, then it goes viral, as they say. that means.
I think people need to understand this is 2008. So things.
2009, I think.
2009. Okay, yeah. So things going viral at this point is still like a phenomenon. It's
It that wasn't something you're thinking of. Yeah, exactly. Now, like, it happens every.
Yeah, minute, everything's right?
Go viral. You try to get things go viral.
Yeah, exactly.
So
how do you become aware of its virality?
I got called by a radio host who I was friends with on the morning. Like drive time FM guy who must have had like some sort of email alerts. It was like at that point I think he was working for Comcast, so maybe Comcast, not Comcast, Clear Channel.
Okay. Do you think it's Clear a bad? Do you think at that point you sensed it was bad when the drive time guy in the morning zoo was calling?
Yeah, basically. That's not like what you want to hear.
No. What did he say to you when he called?
He's like, man, this thing's going viral. Like, it's crazy. Check it out. You know, I don't know.
You're on the air. He didn't tell you.
Oh, no. I wasn't on the air. He called me as like, he called me as like a friend. But I think that was the first time. I believe I was at a fundraiser that was going terribly, actually. Like, no one showed up, at some like bar in South Toledo.
No one showed up at the fundraiser?
It was a weak fundraiser, I remember. I mean, they were called, but again, money raising, never my forte. So this was like a weak. Oh, even for my standards.
So you get a call. He's like, this thing is blowing up. Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of early, like, in the history of, like, things like this, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know if there was ever any realization as to, like, what this means in terms of, like, you know, people looking at it and going viral or whatever. So I don't recall if there was I'm sure there was some sort of conversation, but I still don't think it was, like, that big of an issue, really, honestly. It was like, because, I mean, in a local race, the amount of voters that are watching that is pretty slim in Toledo at that point, I think, really. It's more like young people and the electorate in Toledo's average age is like 65 for a primary. Honestly, I'm not even kidding.
They have no idea what YouTube is.
They don't even know what YouTube is. So, I mean, from like a real – and then our campaign goes on. I'm still the commissioner. I'm doing all that stuff. Like, all these things are still going on. It's just kind of like
– But it mattered enough to the extent that the campaign thought you had to deal with it.
Well, I think it was honestly – that there was a good way to deal with it so that you could actually you know, let's say I was at 22% or something in the poll, like I could actually go to like 24% with a beer summit, you know, and I might not have, I might have gone maybe to 20, but you know, it wasn't like a huge swing one way and then you had to like do a huge swing. It was like, oh, there's an opening here. Look at, you know, you can look like a good guy, you know, just having a beer, talking over some, you know, with some guy who doesn't like you and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, like look like very sort of magnanimous, I guess.
So how'd you execute the beer summit?
I don't, you know, I mean, I just remember showing up at a bar and having a beer, in essence, and talking with this guy. And basically all he was interested in was organic farming, I believe, and wanted to pitch me on some ideas about his, he had an idea for a business, I think, about organic farming. So that was really what we talked about.
Were you at all, like, embarrassed by the whole process? Like, I got to go meet this guy. There's this weird facade where I have to care about this
thing. Right, right. I mean, I cared about it to some extent. I mean, let's say, to be in politics is a constant state of that question, right? Like, right? Are you embarrassed to be doing anything? Like, I mean, every day for me in politics, there was always that question. Like, what am I doing? I'm having, like, press conferences in front of, like, you know, a dog pound and like vigils and I mean for dog, you know, things like these are sort of bizarre situations that you don't, or certainly I never expected myself.
Showing up at fundraisers where there's not really anybody
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's, I mean, that is actually less surreal than some, you know, the daily sort of like trying to promote yourself and get your message across
but,
and stuff.
But there's also something so like unnatural about that specific thing. Like, here's a guy who just like heckled you for 5 minutes.
That's right. That's right.
Like in a normal human interaction.
That's right. It would not.
You'd be like, fuck you. I'll never see you again. But as a politician, you'd be like, I'll get a beer with you.
Yeah, right. Exactly. No, I mean, it's not something. No, I mean, I end up.
Are you friends with him on Facebook now?
I could be. I'm not. I mean, I definitely, yeah. I mean, I ran into him after that and had cordial interactions with him.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you know, Toledo's a pretty small, relatively small place. So, you know, you see people. And
gotcha.
I have no. And actually, I ended up, this was a weird coincidence. I ended up dating a girl there after this who I believe was the maid of honor in his wedding.
That is so small worldish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you talk about it with the girl?
Just briefly.
I don't know if you've seen my work.
Yeah, right.
I was heckled.
So after, so the beer summit happens. Did you get that 2-point bump in the polls?
Who knows? At that point, we didn't have any money to do polls. So it was like your finger in
could
the
barely
wind.
Pay for the beer.
That's
did
true.
You, I mean, did you get when this thing became viral?
Yeah.
Did friends that you hadn't heard from in years call you or did what
a
family?
Yeah. I mean, definitely. Yeah. I mean, people were like, whoa, that's the guy I went to like college with or something. You know what I mean? So yeah, I'm going to shoot him an email and then I'd like ask him for money for my campaign.
did you get any money from them?
I might have. Yeah, I probably did actually.
I just got a last for me on this episode. Last one, the South Park stuff.
Uh-huh.
That like, that's a cultural milestone that you hit.
In some way, yeah. I guess they did use my last name, though, right?
I don't
only
think
my
they
first
did.
Name. Yeah, that was kind of disappointing.
But was the cartoon likeness of you accurate, or were
was
you
it
were
extremely
you
good looking?
Yeah.
If so, yes. Yeah. No, I don't know who was the cartoon likeness.
I forget. But I remember it was on. It was definitely on.
It was a woman, actually. I think
refugees from Syria should be considered in need of international protection.
Boo, Wendy. Boo, Wendy.
The vast majority of refugees from Syria are likely to meet refugee
boo,
status
Wendy
criteria, and this
boo.
Should benefit from...
Boo, Wendy. Liar. Boo. Boo, Ben. Boo.
Did you watch it? I mean...
I definitely watched it. Yeah, that, you know, you gotta...
Sure.
You gotta check
all right,
out.
So depression is essentially set in at your campaign. You don't... You're not into it, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, honestly...
And then what's – how much time is between when this happens and when the election happens?
Not a lot because I there was a primary which I lost in.
Was it relief essentially?
Partly it was because it was like I can move on with the next chapter in my life basically. And I knew at that point I was going to leave.
Did you even want to win at that point?
Everyone wants – I mean I think of course yes. In a perfect world I would have won.
Sure.
I think there's no doubt about it. I mean I – you know it's just it's human nature. But I mean I was – it was funny because a good friend of mine – came over to our – and I had – you know, the last two elections I had won it pretty handily actually, and it was a much different atmosphere for my election night party. But so, you know, I had a group of people over at my house and the guy, one of my real close friends and sort of mentors, came over, and I knew it was a bad sign. He didn't bring just like one bottle of wine. He brought two huge jugs, like knowing this was gonna, you know, this
is gonna be a long
night. It's gonna be a long night. Yeah. So that was sort of the mood at that point. And I mean, but you know, you still, like, there were a lot of campaign, like younger campaign workers and stuff who were like really upset, I think, and they were crying and stuff. So, you know, it's a weird situation to be in when you're not totally upset that you lost, but other people are. So that was sort of a strange dynamic that night, I recall.
What was, yeah. I mean, now, and then I guess you're out of politics after yeah. that. But this video lives on, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, I assume it'll live on for eternity.
Well, depends. I guess maybe after this show.
Sorry. Yeah, right.
What's that like to, like, have that thing that's sort of, like, this internet mark on?
Yeah. I mean, it's... I don't know. I mean, honestly, I don't lose a lot of sleep over it.
I hope
it.
Not.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, it's not something that... A, you have no control over. B, I mean, in my analysis, which obviously is completely biased, the way I handled it, while not like maybe like the textbook way a politician handles a heckler, right, was, I think, in a fairly gentlemanly fashion. And, you know, honestly, like, in the big picture to me, things worked out pretty well. I got to, for a brief time, be a member of the Fourth Estate like yourselves. Got to cover the Detroit Tigers for the Toledo Blade. Got to follow around Bob Dylan on an Asian concert tour. And, you know, then I got a great job at the CFPB where I'm at now. So, you know, for 4 years now. So I can't, you know, honestly, it kind of turned out okay.
Thank you to Ben Knopf for joining Candidate Confessional. A quick disclaimer here, though. Ben was speaking on his own behalf and not on behalf of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, where he now works. A thanks again to Christine Canetta, our fearless editor, for putting together this podcast. Thank you, Christine. As always, you can find Candidate Confessional at iTunes, on SoundCloud, or better yet, at thehuffingtonpost.com. Please, please tune in next week when we interview 2014 Senate candidate from Georgia, Jack Kingston. Till then, happy trails.